This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good morning. It's Saturday, 7 a.m. in the morning. This is the AM 970 The Apple. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host for the next hour. I've been the host for quite some time now. I guess in doggy years, it's about 47 years. But on the show, we talk about emergencies and disasters and how to be prepared for them prior to them happening and after they happen and what you can do and to mitigate further damage. There is the staples that I talk about, contact numbers and important people that are relative to your situation, whether it's flooding, fires, or smoke damage, or even when neighborhoods get cut off. I keep on bringing up that March 13th this past year, where entire neighborhoods and the blocks of towns were inundated and underwater, and people were getting rescued by boats and things like that. This past week, I went down to Central Jersey and I visited one of those homes who had not been rehabilitated yet from the March 13 storms. And this older woman, she was in bad shape. It was a sad situation, but she finally got the insurance company to do the right thing, even though it's a process because there's the flood insurance is a very, very difficult situation to navigate. A lot of red tape involved there. Dealing with this older woman, and we took a look at her property, and she lives right next to a body of water down there by this river, but she got over inundated. She got flooded out, and the foundation crumbled, and she's just getting things on board now. The insurance company settled, and she's starting to look at people too who can assist her. She happens to be a listener, so I got the phone call, went down to try to put her in the right direction. We're going in the right direction, but it's a lot of people don't realize that when you have these emergencies and these disasters, there's a lot of time that goes by before final conclusion. Lots of red tape involved. So before the first hammer gets back swinging, or into swinging, I should say. So it's an interesting case. I'll bring it up a lot more in the future as the project starts to progress. But again, the show's the premise of this program is to be prepared and for disasters and emergencies, and also after they happen, and what you can do to mitigate the damages, which ties into National Fire Prevention Week, which actually should be every day in my world. Some of the things that I see on a daily basis or every other day, some of the things could have been prevented, as in further damage. Sometimes fires, there's a lot of old buildings in our area. The tri-state area is full of old places. So being proactive and checking out your wiring and light fixtures and candles, which like I said, we're talking about Fire Prevention Week. Here's a wild article. Got sent to me in an email. I'm gonna read it verbatim. A fire chief down in Baltimore. They had an open night, if you will, where town people. It's almost like what we do in municipalities or small suburban towns, where the night's out. This was a 5x5 block where the firehouse was located down in Baltimore, and so he read this to the crowd, and it said Prevention Month has its roots into the great Chicago fire of 1871. And he goes on by saying, where a barn caught fire when a cow kicked a lantern out of the hands of the owner who was milking the cow. Friends and neighbors formed a bucket brigade, threw water on the fire, never thinking to call the fire department. He said, do you know more people die in fires than hurricanes, earthquakes, floods, and all other natural disasters combined? That's mind-boggling. He said that every year children start nearly 100,000 fires. So fire safety begins at home, naturally, right? So you go and have your escape routes, two different ways to get out of a building. So, have somebody in the family be fire marshal for that that month or that year or so on and so forth. But there's also a lot of proactive things you can do. So with National Fire Prevention Week, some say month, I say the whole year. I do have a guest today. He's been on before, but he wore a different hat. Now the hat he wears now for me is the captain in a volunteer fire department here in Bergen County. Dan O'Brien, it's great to have you back. Appreciate you coming in.
Good morning, Chris.
So, Dan, you're an advocate. I'm an advocate of prevention, being proactive regarding fires. And I want to, some of the conversations I've had with other guests in the last couple of weeks, and all of some of the things that I've read in the paper and my the emails I get, it's, you know, disasters and emergencies. I don't want this to be like the doom and gloom, because there's a lot of positive things that can come out of a bad situation, hence the Great Chicago Fire. When we have this every single year, I know the departments and the fire departments in the city, out in the island, you all get ramped up to try to, you know, give your, you know, Joe Citizen some tools, like we talked about here, always having the toolkit for preparedness about fire prevention. Why don't you, let's just jump right into the deep end here and get right into it. So what is step one for you guys when you are preparing to, hey, I need to give this information out to the public?
The first thing that's most important for everybody, no matter where you are, no matter where you go, and especially in your home, is to plan. You always want to plan for the worst, hope for the best. So when you're home, you need to have a plan. If there was ever a fire in my home, how do I get out? Where do we go and have a common place for everybody to meet once you get outside? The worst thing that the fire department wants to hear when they roll up on the scene is, we don't know where little Johnny is. And Johnny may still be inside the house. If you have a common place outside, it could be your driveway, your neighbor's driveway, your front lawn. It doesn't matter where it is. Everybody gets out of the house. Everybody meets in a common place. The most important thing is life. The house, we can fix that. We can build a new one. A life is a life.
Yeah. You know, I reiterate that most of the time. When I'm on, not so much water damage as much as fire damage, is everybody all right? Because things are things. If you know, if it's taught us anything, you look at the videotapes and the news reports of Katrina. You know what? People died down there. Forget about a house. People died. You know. So for me, I don't put a whole lot of credibility into it. I mean, I want to salvage things. People have a lot of deep strings and feelings towards these things. But you're right. You know, life's more important.
Absolutely. One of the things that is a little acronym that we use is EDITH, and it stands for Exit Drill in the Home. You should have your EDITH set up. If I'm in bedroom number 2, I go to whatever hallway, you know your house, you know your neighborhood, you know a way out. And just because you come in the front door and walk up the staircase to go to the bedroom, that may not be the way out. If that fire is on a staircase or that fire is by the front door, there should always be the B plan, a second way out, and that is that exit drill in the home. That all goes back to the planning. Plan a way out and have your common meeting place outside the house so that there's a head count, so you know where little Johnny is.
Well, if you just joined us, this is a Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. My guest today is an old friend. He's not that old. But he's a good friend, but like I said, he wears a couple of hats out there, but one of them that he's wearing today is he's captain in the fire department. You know, a lot of people, and you've seen it, and I've seen that after you first responders get done doing your business, and I have to come in on the insurance end or the property side, a fair amount of people trying to put out fires themselves.
That is the absolute worst thing you could possibly try to do. The best thing to do, first off, is always get out. The next thing is 911. Let the fire department come and put the fire out. The physical damage that's going to be created is repairable. Life is life. The next thing is that if you delay the fire department because you think you can put that fire out and you try with your garden hose or, as you had told about, the bucket brigade in your barn, the fire is going to double in intensity every minute it burns. If you cannot extinguish it immediately, you're going to lose it. Now you've delayed the fire department coming. Instead of it being a one-room fire, now it's a 3 or 4-room fire.
When the week starts, and like I said, you guys get ramped up and you start having your literature and you have simulations. You want to get the townspeople, like in the city, you don't really have that. But we're not, condense-wise, there's more people there in the outside of Jersey or at the Long Island or Staten Island up in Westchester. So, I guess prior to that, you must be starting somewhere in August to start getting jacked up and putting out the flyers and say, listen, in a couple of months, it's going to be preparedness month. This is what you got to do. Once you come down to the firehouse, we're going to have sodas and hot dogs and let the kids maybe a couple of rides. But, you know, Because, you know, in our country, we're so wrapped up with the day-to-day stuff, we forget about really what's important and what could happen in case a disaster does happen. You know, it's always like, bam, it's in my face. Okay, now what do I do? That preparedness, it's relative to any step of, all steps of life. And we'll be right back after the break.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back, Disaster Recovery Hour, and your host, Chris Plunkett. I speak a little too fast sometimes, so I got to slow down. I know, I think my father-in-law was telling me I was garbling some of my words, but you know, that's what happens when you're in talk radio. You feel like you're in front of your fireplace and you just keep on jamming along. So when we went to the break, I was talking to Danny about, you know, open houses. I know the volunteer fire departments, doesn't matter, it's across the country. This is the week that they have their open houses, try to get the community involved. You should check out during the day, most of those houses, the garage doors are open, the doors are open, they're probably sitting in front of the truck, waiting to answer some questions. So, Dan, what encompasses an open night at a volunteer house?
Open house night is an invitation to the residents in the borough to come in and take a look at the fire equipment, look at some of the fire engines, the trucks, look at the tools that we use, do some demonstrations. We keep some of the stuff that has caused a fire or it has a result of a fire, so you get a kind of an idea of what happens, what it looks like, and try to get a little bit of an impact so that you can see the devastation that a fire causes. It is much easier to prevent the fire than it is to put it out, clean it up, and rebuild from a fire. So if all of this effort goes into fire prevention and we can prevent one fire from happening, it's well worth all of the effort.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this statistic about kids, children start nearly 100,000 fires a year. It's mind-boggling. Just absolutely. And I do know a kid who did start a fire, and I wasn't allowed to hang around with him afterwards. But and I think he went away somewhere, but that's for another show. So we talked about Edith, you know, your exit plan. There's numerous things. You get smoke detectors. There's a plethora of prevention tools that you can do. You know, talk about smoke detectors. People think about it all the time, but you know what? They look up and they see this little green light in there, and they're not really giving much thought to it.
Smoke detectors are out of sight, out of mind. Nobody really thinks about it until it starts to beep. And if it's beeping, there's something wrong. If there's no smoke in the building or in your house, then it's probably the battery. When was the last time you changed the battery in your smoke detector? I'll bet you can't remember. The easy way to remember is you change your clock, you change your battery. It's very simple, easy to remember, and it'll always be there for you. Smoke detector never sleeps. In the middle of the night, when you're off in dreamland, that smoke detector is outside your bedroom doing its job. And if it senses the smoke, it's going to wake you up and save your life. So I think that your life is worth a 9-volt battery. Change the battery. It's a very, very inexpensive insurance policy. Early detection means faster response from the fire department, less damage to your home.
Now, so you have smoke detectors, there's two types of smoke detectors. There's the battery type, and there's the hardwired that has the backup battery. But you know what? A lot of city buildings, you know, whether it's over here in Jersey City or it's in Hoboken, multiple dwelling buildings, you know, people don't have hardwires. It's the battery. And you read the paper, said, well, there was a devastating fire on the sixth floor of this building, yada yada yada. There's a lot of the times it's the battery didn't warn anybody. So and also, you know, so couple that with people leaving their apartment. So I mean, in Jersey or Long Island, Westchester, Staten Island, you have single family dwellings. You know, they're going to be going, they should have their exit plan, front door, side door, off a back roof. But in the city, the common theme is, you know, they're solid block buildings, stay in your apartment. But people seem to chuck the door, meaning keep it open, they run out. But that does is just create more damage because the fire jumps from floor to floor.
Fires need three things to survive. They need heat, they need oxygen, and they need fuel. If you take any one of those three away, the fire goes out. By keeping your door closed, You don't let the heat into your apartment if you're in a high-rise building. You keep the smoke out of your apartment. Sometimes it's called sheltering in place, which is one of the tools that the fire departments do use. You could actually stay in the building. You could stay in your apartment, close the door. If you're in a single-family dwelling and if your smoke detector has gone off and you run out the front door, close the door. Limit the fire spread. Close the bedroom doors, close your windows, close the front door.
Because, when sheetrock starts to burn, there's a fire rated for per half inch, 5/8, so on and so forth, double rock, so on and so forth. People see more, water damage to sheetrock, so they think it gets easily compromised. It does a very good job of containing a fire.
Sheetrock is an excellent fire stop. As long as it is intact, there's no holes in it. From behind the door where the doorknob blew the hole through the sheetrock when the door got slammed open, or we all know that children have a tendency to penetrate a few holes in the sheetrock. But if it is intact, it's a great fire stop, great fire stop.
So we go down the smoke detectors. The rock was really not about prevention, but you know what I think a lot of people don't comprehend is what a carbon monoxide detector really does. And because it's this odorless, colorless gas.
Carbon monoxide is a product of combustion. Wherever there is a fire, there is CO. When your furnace lights the flue pipe, CO goes up the flue pipe and is exited outside of the home. The hot water heater does the same thing. There's a flue pipe on it, and as long as the flue pipe is intact and connected properly and has the proper draft, it all leaves. Even when you cook, that little fire on your stove produces CO. So that small amount of CO is usually taken out by the exhaust fan in the kitchen, and it never really builds to a level in the home that is going to be detrimental to you. But again, the CO detectors are just as valuable as that smoke detector, and there should be at least one CO detector in your home. And again, they've got batteries. Change the battery. I can't stress enough how important it is to make sure that thing is going to function.
If you just join us, I like to say that, if you just joined us, this is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Today, my guest is Dan O'Brien. He's captain of the Volunteer Fire Department here in Bergen County, and it is Fire Prevention Week. The COs, it's a funny thing because, not a funny thing, excuse me, but some of the water losses that I go on in the basements where they have the hot water heaters, I've come in after the fact where people have had issues where children have passed out because they're in there drying the structure and they disconnect the lines, which you have leaking CO. It's happened a lot more often than it's publicized, I tell you. And it was a very large near-death experience here in Bergen County about a couple of years ago. I know you know the story. So when it comes to this CO, changing the batteries, do you like one per X amount of square feet? Or, I mean, what is applicable to a home?
You need less CO detection than you do smoke detection. CO detected, it should be at least one on every floor, and then especially within the bed, outside the bedroom doors. Most people sleep with the bedroom doors either all the way closed or partially closed. CO does not originate in the bedroom. It's, again, from combustion. So your central heating system, boiler, hot air furnace, whatever it is that you have, your hot water heater, that's where it's going to originate from. Generally, again, in a one-family home, that's in the basement. In a large apartment building, it's probably downstairs in a boiler room somewhere. The CO detector outside your bedroom door will detect the CO levels before it gets to a level where it's harmful to you. You'll be alerted, and you can get out.
I remember because I just bought a house this past, I guess it's going to come up to a year, but the fire marshal had to come in and give, that's part of the CO that you can get so you can move in. A lot of people don't have fire extinguishers, which is mind-boggling. I always thought it was kind of cool because I sprayed it once and all that stuff came out of it. But you should have one. It should be in the kitchen. Is that correct?
Having a fire extinguisher handy is a great tool to have. However, 911, then the fire extinguisher. If you can help limit the damage of the fire, that's great. But I would not have you try to be a fireman. Don't put the fire out. Call 911. If you can help us, help it. If not, then just get out.
No. So, like I said, Dan's giving us some of these prevention tools. Again, the whole program is predicated on being be proactive, preparedness. So we have the COs, we have the smoke detectors, you got batteries. I mean, these are very simplistic tools. Flashlights. Nobody has flashlights.
Flashlights are a very important tool for you to have with you. You should keep it in your bedroom with you. Something that's very, very common is if there is a power failure in the neighborhood or there is an electrical fire in your residence and you lose the power that feeds the lights in the hallway for you to get out, you need to be able to see to get out. So one of the things that everybody should keep somewhere close in their bedroom, maybe in their night table or whatever alongside the bed, is a working flashlight. Check the flashlight. Turn it on. Make sure it works. Make sure everything is working with it. Check the batteries. Again, we're counting on the batteries. Batteries got to be there.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to go to a break because we need to pay the bills here. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, we're back. Dan and I had a little laugh about the Giants over the Jets. So we're back after station break. This is Chris Plunkett. I'm your host of the Disaster Recovery Hour. Every week, 7 a.m., Saturday mornings on AM 970, The Apple, the talk of New York. When we went to the break, we were talking about some of the, like, flashlights and the COs. You know what? Now we're talking about it's the fall, and we're going into winter. The fall brings on pumpkins and candles. Where are we going with that, Dan? We're talking danger.
Yeah, it's open fire. Candles are very nice. They're romantic.
Yeah, they smell good.
It looks a little scary inside that carved-out jack-o'-lantern sitting on your front stoop next to the pile of leaves.
Right, man.
Safety. Guys, please think about what you're doing. Candles can be great. Candles can be a great asset. They're also fire. So using them in a jack-o'-lantern outside on a concrete patio or a concrete stoop, not that bad of a deal. Down on the bottom of the stoop next to a pile of dry leaves next to the house, it could be an issue.
Yeah. You know, last week I went outside, it was just barbecuing, and I came up and I smelt the candle, and I just said to myself, let's see where my wife placed this one. I mean, this is what I do for a living. Fire creates lots of damage, and unfortunately, or fortunately, I come in and I take care of the damage after that. Again, don't meet me professionally, meet me personally. And there it was, right on the coffee table. And I know that story you were telling me. Why don't you tell? I shouldn't be laughing, but I can't believe my wife still does it. I love her, but she still does it.
All of your scented candles that people burn inside the home are usually in a glass container. The glass container is fine. It holds the wax. It works well till you start to burn the candle down. As the candle burns lower and lower, the glass gets hotter and hotter. The glass can crack. The hot wax runs out. That lit wick flows along with it to the edge of the coffee table and onto the rug, and we got a problem.
And I'm not bashing candles or the candle makers, and you know they do a nice job. I understand that. So I do like candles, but there should be something. I mean, you put a cup on a coffee table. You have a little serviette, little doily type of thing. You should have the similar thing, right? What do they have for that?
Sure. You can use a trivet. You could use an oven-safe dish underneath it, something that could take the heat and would contain the wax and the fire if that glass container should ever crack open. And don't let it burn all the way to the bottom. When there's a half an inch or so left in the bottom, it's time for a new one.
Now, I mean, when you went through the academy, besides the films and the photos, and unfortunately, I'm sure there was a lot of tragedy there that attached to those photos. What the live simulations that you have, it is just like that. It just rolls, fire just rolls right off the table and right onto your carpet. I mean, that's what you were telling me.
Fire is gonna find its way, and the hot wax is a liquid, and it's gonna flow to the edge and drip off. And there are numerous house fires every year that are started by candles. not reckless, and I'm not, again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have the candles.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But just safety and think about what you're doing. So if you want to have the candles, great. I love it. You know, they've got all of the fragrances. You can get the evergreen one. You think you're Christmas 24/7. But just put it in something else that's safe. Don't let the hot glass sit on a wooden coffee table. Don't leave them unattended. If you're going to leave your house, I don't care if you're leaving your house to go pick up the newspaper on the curb. Blow the candle out. Go do what you're going to go do. Come back and relight it. It only takes a second for it to go wrong.
Yeah, well, a couple of years ago, there was I got called in, unfortunately, this girl. She had a candle. It was on her coffee table, and she was doing laundry. And she opened the door, and she had some frilly type of upholstery pretty close to the flame. It was a high wick flame. And she opened the door while she was doing in and out, so the flame just got pushed a little bit from the air. Got caught fire. By the time she came back, half the apartment was up in flames. But the door was chucked originally while she was doing, because she had the fireproof latch on the door. Because, you know, all multi-dwelling buildings have to have that's a fire rated code door, and she burned half the floor. So even though you're doing your domestic duties, you're doing your laundry, you're washing your dishes. That's there. It is right there. As innocent as that, and it starts. And again, we're not advocating, hey, never use a candle, because you know it's ambiance. We like that kind of thing. You just gotta watch what you're doing. This is Disaster Recovery Hour. Your host Chris Plunkett speaking with Captain Dan O'Brien. Dan, well, you know what? We have a lot of fireplaces. A lot of people don't clean them out. Forget about the flute. Forget about they go to bed 12:30 at night and the thing still flames. Bad move.
It's like everything else that you own. There's certain maintenance that has to be done. You have to make sure that the flue is cleaned at least once a year. And that's if you burn good, clean, seasoned firewood. You never leave a fire unattended. If you're going to go to bed, wait till the fire goes out. Make sure you're down to just a bed of ashes. If you've got glass doors on a fireplace, close them. Close it off. Make it safe. Again, I can't stress enough how many times people look at it after the fact when the fire department's rolling up the hoses and go, gee, I should have. Well, let's think about that before it's the I should have, and it's not the I should have, it's the I did. I thought about that. I let the fire burn out. I closed the doors. I cleaned the flue. Maintenance and taking care of things makes for less problems down the road.
Yeah. I know a lot of people. I remember when I was a kid, my dad liked to clean the chimney himself, and I thought that was ridiculous, even as a little kid. Well, Dad, you're a banker. You make good money. Get somebody to clean the thing. But there should be maintenance contracts with the fireplaces. This way, you know, they're always going to call you when it's time. I mean, it's the business they're in. Instead of you going, okay, next weekend, you know what, the Giant game's on, I'll do it after the game. Oh, they lose, I'm in a bad mood, I'm not going to clean it now. So they should contact somebody who does that. I don't use anybody because I don't have a fireplace. But that should be part of their preparedness plan.
Again, it's taking care and maintaining the flue pipe on your furnace, the flue pipe on your hot water heater, cleaning the flue out for the fireplace. It's something that has to be done.
All right. So when Dan's by trade is an electrician. When does the crossover, because I wanted to talk about electrical safeties, when does the crossover, is it a plumbing issue or is it an electrical issue? You talk about the hot water heaters because obviously it's a combination of both trades. So, again, you're maintaining your home. Who would maintain that? The plumber or an electrician like yourself?
A plumbing contractor would probably be the guy that would do the flue pipe for the hot water heater. An HVAC contractor would be the guy to do the flue pipe on your furnace. If it's a hot water boiler, that could be the plumber's job. More of them than the electrical contractor. An electrical contractor is going to come into play as we get into the holiday season with lighting. Everybody decorates their houses. Everybody plugs in all the lights. Can't tell you how many times we get the phone call that my entire first floor is now dark and we don't know why.
Right. So, and you know, me being on the insurance end of the all these disasters and emergencies, I think about liability, because technically, if you were to touch the water heater or the piping coming out for the CO safety connections, you're an electrician, you're not a plumber. So, in the eyes of the law, with liability, you'd be at fault, and so would the homeowner for hiring the wrong trade.
Yeah, that would definitely be the case. I mean, we're all contractors are insured for their scope of work, and we're not plumbers, and we really don't, the electrical contractors don't get into the flue pipe end of that kind of work.
So that so we had you know, Halloween's around the corner. You get your candles, you get your pumpkins, you got your candles you know, for spooky effects in the home, but majority of the candle use is during the winter months. For both ambiance and you know, turning out the lights and creating a holiday effect. What goes along with candles also is the overloading of outlets, and you see it as a first responder. I see it coming in after the fire's been put out. What was the cause, and what am I going to do for the cleanup part of it? People just don't get the overloading of an outlet. I just don't get that.
Be right back.
Just because you have the plugs left doesn't mean you have the capacity to power that. And the majority of electrical fires, which there are quite a few in a home, are caused by the wiring outside of the walls. It's the extension cord, it's the cube tap, you know, that's that triple tap thing that you can plug 9,000 things into one single outlet, or the cord underneath the carpet. It goes through a door jamb that the door pinches and shorts it out. Again, safety, and think about what you're doing. If you need an extension cord to run something that you have in your home that's not up for a very short period of time, like holiday lighting, then you need to get an electrical contractor in and permanently install an outlet. The cord going through the door to your front porch so you can have the lamp to read the newspaper on the front porch is not the solution. That's a problem.
Yeah, it's amazing with the cords, and you know, there's the warnings on the cords, not supposed to be used in this manner. Don't overload it. But I guess, you know, again, we're all busy. You know, you forget the, you know, you need to put the Christmas lights up. It's a Saturday afternoon. It's cold out. You run over to one of the hardware stores or one of the big hardware stores. You get yourself an extension cord, but you don't use it properly because there's different gauges to it also. You know, but let's go to a break, and we're going to continue because there's a lot more on the electrical end that that meets the eye. Be right back. Thanks.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back. Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Always a big fan of Dan. Dan's got a lot of talents, but one of the talents that he's very good at is his captain in the fire department. And it's Fire Prevention Week across the country. Some cities and some towns extended for an entire month. I think that's a great idea. Just like September was National Disaster Preparedness Month, and we had Nick Maurice from the OEM down in the state police, giving us some background on how the state and the tri-state area is keeping us safe at night with the drilling, and which also brings in first responders like Dan. But with now that we're jumped into October and it's prevention, one of the things we also see is we see people with old paint cans, we see old gas cans storing them, and you know, they're not using them anymore, but they're piling up, and they just kind of, it's in the corner of the garage or the basement, and they're just storing a bomb.
Not a good place to be storing flammable liquids down in the basement next to your hot water heater with a standing pilot light on it. A lot of people do store flammable liquids. If it's stored properly and it's stored in a safe container, there's nothing wrong with that, and it will be safe. Storing gasoline for your lawnmower, your trimmer, or your generator for that power failure, that presents a little bit more of a problem. Gasoline vapors are very light. Gasoline evaporates relatively rapidly. It's got to be in a sealed container, and I mean sealed. Preferably not even in the garage. Definitely not in the house. If it's in the garage and it's in a sealed container, most likely you're going to be okay. But if you've got a shed in your backyard or a tool storage container outside your house, put it outside. Get it out of the house. If you're not using it, get rid of it. If you've got old paint, old lacquer thinner, shellac, we all know what this stuff is. Everybody that owns a home has done some type of home improvement, you know, one way or another, and you've used the products. Again, safe use, safe storage, no problem. Unsafe storage, it's going to be an issue.
Yeah. You know, I wish that the counties, and I've looked across the whole area, from our counties over here in Jersey out to Westchester and over to Long Island, about that twice a year, a common depot to drop off the gases and the paints and the thinners and the lacquers and things. I think it should be maybe even quarterly, because you know what? You store that stuff up quickly. And when I sold my house and I moved to another house, I threw away like 40 cans of paint. Well, I had to wait for some, I think it was in July, to get rid of all of it. I think people see it, you know what, and they wind up disposing it probably illegally. I think I got myself a little bit of a conscience, so I held on to it reluctantly. But because we've seen in the past of people storing gas, and there's when you have a flood inside a basement or inside your garage, and that gas spills out, now you have a contaminated site. And it's no longer just a fire department issue. Now it's a hazmat issue. So, again, this is part of the prevention, if you could do that. I mean, tell me it's not, right?
No, definitely, again, proper storage. It's got to be in a sealed, especially gasoline. I can't tell you how volatile gasoline can be. And it doesn't take a lot of gasoline to get the right combustion mixture of fumes. It's not the liquid that burns. It's the actual vapor that burns. And it doesn't take a lot of liquid to make a lot of vapor. The right amount of vapor, and you've got an issue. You store that gas can in your garage. What do? You go out to the garage. You start your car up.
Yeah.
That could be kaboom.
This is Chris Plunkett. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm speaking with Dan. Dan O'Brien is the captain in the fire department. So we're going to the winter months. Gets cold, obviously, still around here. But we're talking about the holidays. We're talking about, electric issues. This is the busiest time of year in my industry, and it's I know you being a first responder, it's your busiest time because people are staying inside their homes, and when you have that, you have more human interaction inside a home, and there's more high probability of mistakes to happen and disasters to occur. And so the holiday lighting, give me one of your old time favorites. It's with the overloading of the plugs. How do you hit home and to tell these people, listen, this is what you got to do.
You need to have the proper permanent wiring, and then when you do your holiday decorating, and you're going to use the lights on your Christmas tree or lighting inside your home, the candles in the window, keep the extension cords to a minimum. Use heavy-duty cords. They're all rated. If you look on the tag on the cord, it will tell you what the amperage rating of that cord is. Don't use a 2-amp cord on a 10-amp load. It's going to burn up. Always buy heavy-duty. Always buy good quality cords.
Harry homeowner, I mean, your average Joe business owner, It's easy to understand. It's easy reading. You don't have to be a licensed electrician to understand that. Is that correct?
No, not at all. If you look on the cord, again, there'll be an amperage rating, and you want to see the UL label. If it has a UL label, it's been tested by Underwriter Laboratories, and it's rated to do the job that it's on that tag. Again, if the cord is frayed, throw it out. If it's getting cracked and dried out from age, throw it out. I can't tell you how many times we see the cords right at the plug where you plug it into the wall receptacle, and it got pinched behind the piece of furniture whatever, and it sparked, and then it's a problem.
And then also the electrical tape, and that's also coming off because it's been on there for 15 years. So with Fire Prevention Week, and we're going into the holidays and the cold seasons, you know, that also includes, it sounds like we're going plug-in here, but, generators, people doing with the cords and with gasoline for your generators. So it all ties in together. You know, this whole prevention thing, they're simple tools to adhere by. And I guess one of the frustrating things that you see is, you know, how simple some of these things are to put into play regarding the volunteer fire departments and the paid fire departments. You know, there's a job they have to do, whether it's paid or volunteer, but you don't want to see loss of life. You don't want to see loss of property. But coming out to these open houses that all fire departments do, you know, all you got to do is contact them. Or you go to your info.gov, some of the websites in your states or your counties, you can find this information. It's everywhere. And, you know, I always hear about people with the lighting on trees. And, you know, you have both. You have the Christian holiday. You have the Hebrew holidays. It all encompasses lighting and candles. And, I mean, how many times you've been called out on jobs like that that they just don't listen?
That's the exact problem is, you know, think it through. Think about what you're doing. There's nothing wrong with candles. There's nothing wrong with lighting. There's nothing wrong with using an extension cord for temporary use. Just make sure that it's good quality stuff. You thought about it. Think it through. Be safe. Be safe.
Well, you know, it's always a pleasure when I see Dan. We talk pretty frequently. If you have anything you want to ask me, you can go to the webpage, cppems.com, and there's the question and comments section. Hey, listen, put some stuff in there for Dan. All I got to do is just flip it over to Dan. He'll answer it, and he'll type away. He likes to type some keys once in a while. He'd rather be out there physically working. It's the kind of good guy he is. Dan, why don't you just give your website and your contact information? So,
contact information is it's Academy Electrical Contractors. It's www.academyelectrical.com. And on the website, we do have a couple of pointers for you to take a look at. You can look at some of the stuff that we've done. If you've got any questions, just do the contact us page, shoot me an email, and I'll get back to you. Again, I wish everybody a great holiday season. We're rolling into the holidays in the fall. Have a great time. Enjoy your holidays. Most importantly, be safe. Fire prevention.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. Next week, we're going to have a couple of chiefs. I think I might bring Dan back also. It's kind of be like an open forum thing of, I think there's people really need to know what's going on out there to assist our local citizens and our fellow Americans. So I appreciate Dan coming by. And like I said, next week it will be also a good show on fire prevention. It should last the entire month in my book. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and let's bring home the boys and girls from the war.
You've been listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. And don't forget to tune in every Saturday morning at 7 for the Disaster Recovery Hour, right here on AM 970, The Apple.